Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Did you get your census form in the mail? On Thursday's show, we will have a census official to walk us through the form and take any questions that you may have. Meanwhile, check out our new online census project, 10 Questions That Count. See funny census videos. Add your household's portrait to our 10 Questions photo gallery and nominate an 11th question. What one additional question would you ask all Americans? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show for our 10 Questions That Count Census Project website. Now, tens of thousands of students in at least 32 states walked out of classes on March 4th in a national day of action to defend public education. In New York, CUNY students and teachers rallied outside of Governor Patterson's office. At UC Berkeley, students and teachers have staged walkouts and building takeovers to protest a 32% California tuition hike. And these protests are causing some people to have flashbacks of the 1960s. Same rhetoric, same tactics, to a point. But critics say this isn't about war or civil rights like it was 40 years ago. This is about entitlement and self-absorption. So to talk about what the student protests are all about and where the movement might be headed are Ananya Roy, professor of urban studies and international development at UC Berkeley and a member of the Solidarity Alliance that's organizing some of this. Also joining us, Todd Gitlin, journalism professor at Columbia and former president of Students for a Democratic Society, the student protest group in the 1960s, to talk about how current political movements fit into the legacy of student protest past. Welcome to both of you. Hi.
Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Professor Roy, following the announcement that UC would impose a 32% tuition hike, you said, "We have all become students of color now." Can you explain to our New York audience what's going on in the UCs and what you meant?
Well, the protests last year were very much in response to a set of devastating budget cuts and fee hikes. And I argued that what was once seen as a student of color problem, in other words, that access to affordable, good education was quite difficult for certain minority groups, had now become a generalized condition of vulnerability and exclusion for so many Americans, including the so-called middle class. And I say so-called because that term is such a misnomer in California and elsewhere in America as the middle class is hit by job losses, foreclosures, and now the lack of access to affordable public education. So in that sense, we have all become students of color now.
Todd Gitlin, are you seeing anything like this at Columbia, or is this a phenomenon that's hitting public higher education because of the obvious state budget cuts around the country?
I don't see any of this at Columbia, and I think it is a public it's a public sector protest. I think it's really quite remarkable to if we open the frame and don't think of this in light of previous student movements, but think of it given what's happening in America today. I mean, we just heard Richard Ravitch defending, you know, the hands-off approach of most officials with respect to financial crisis. Students are living through a financial crisis that most Americans are living through, but unlike most Americans, they're not inert. They're actually they've stood up, and whatever you want to say about their tax and so on, I don't live in California anymore. I don't have any view of that. But what I do have a view of is that this country, like in fact this world, has lived through this writhing, devastating, upheaving phenomenon, and most people are just simply, you know, inertly beholding it as if it were some sort of spectacle taking place on another planet, talking about it as a crisis that's happening to somebody else. So I think we should see the student movement today as possibly a vanguard, or in any case possibly a surrogate, or possibly we don't know what kind of success it's going to have. But at the very least, it is an attempt to address something that is really global.
And listeners, our phones are open, 212-433-WNYC, with very first priority to any current public college or university students who may be involved in such a movement or any of these protests or with any reaction to this at all, if you are a student at a public institution of higher education, call us, 212-433-WNYC, and we'll let some other people on in a little while. But public university students first, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. But Professor Roy, there's a critique of this in some quarters. For example, Peter Robinson, a former speechwriter for President Reagan and a fellow at the conservative Hoover Institution out there in California, who had an editorial, an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal criticizing you and your movement. And as I'm sure you know, he wrote that while the movement tries to see itself in the tradition of the Freedom Riders and the farm workers' struggle, that this is really a demonstration of the entitlement mentality and self-absorption that has come to dominate much of higher education, his words. What do you say to that?
Well, a couple of things. One, it is not my movement or anyone's movement. I think what is quite important about this is that this is a dispersed, decentered movement where students have connected in complex and interesting networks across the country. They have connected to student movements in Europe. And more importantly, they have connected to the K-12 systems. They've connected to community colleges. I think that Peter Robinson and critics like him are very, very wrong. And they're wrong in that this is not a special interest lobbying effort. This is not about entitlements. I think that rhetoric of the so-called me generation is again, misplaced. I think this is a generation that not only is very concerned about its own academic successes, but is also concerned about issues of social justice and social change.
Were they protesting those things before? If this is what's energized them, where were they on Afghanistan, on systemic poverty, on banking reforms?
Well, I think that they have been very involved in the protests against the war. I think they have been very involved in taking action against poverty. I teach a class on global poverty at UC Berkeley that has turned out to be one of the largest classes we have on campus. And these are the very students interested in taking a stand against poverty and inequality, not only elsewhere in the world, but also here in America. But I think that what they are organizing around now is not just public education. The March 4th was historic because the organizing was not about flagship universities like Berkeley. It was about the entire sector of public education. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, I think they are shedding light on two things in America. One, that this generation is hitting a brick wall. The number of college-age students continues to rise, and we continue to spend less and less on public education. That's an impossible equation. But second, they're shedding light on priorities. That, in fact, if we are spending this much on the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, if we have spent billions bailing out Wall Street, why as a nation and as a society are we so unwilling to invest in our collective future, i.e. education?
Let me get a student's voice in here, and then we'll get back to Todd Gitlin. Eric in Port Chester, a student at SUNY Purchase, correct, Eric?
Yes. Yes, hello.
Was there a walkout there?
Yes, actually we had quite a successful walkout and a protest which lasted through the entire night into the next morning.
March 4th into 5th?
Yes.
And?
Yeah. We actually had an organization, a group of students on campus who worked very hard to organize everything, and we ended up occupying a student services building for the entire night. We had a protest that almost took the form of a party during the day, and then students decided to occupy the building at night.
It wouldn't be the first time in student history that format through the day was carried. But you heard perhaps Richard Ravitch earlier in the show. You know the dire fiscal straits that New York State is in. If you're calling for no cuts or limited cuts to SUNY, what's the alternative? Do the students have one?
Is the alternative to where the money can come from?
Correct.
Well, I think that you know, one of the most obvious answers is the fact that we're spending billions of dollars on a war that a lot of people are against right now.
But the war doesn't come from the state budget, does it?
Well, I mean, we're all paying taxes towards that. I think some people would like to have more of a choice as to where their tax dollars are going.
Thank you very much. Todd Gitlin, can you connect those two? I mean, the New York State budget doesn't include a state Pentagon, last I looked.
I'm amused by the Peter Robinson quote, if I can comment on that. First of all, I very much doubt...
The former Reagan speechwriter.
Right, yeah. Now at the Hoover Institution. I very much doubt that anybody at the Hoover Institution in the 1960s was that enthusiastic about student protest against war and in favor of civil rights. Secondly, I think it's rather obscene for a California figure to blame students for self-interested politics when the very specific reason why California is in the bucket has to do with the drastically self-interested politics of the dispossessed or self-professed dispossessed of the 1970s who passed Proposition 13, which has put a stranglehold on the California budget ever since.
Limiting the ability to raise taxes.
Indeed.
But are these protesters who are now rising to the surface for their own higher education the same people, Todd, do you think, who organized for Obama in 2008? And where were they earlier this year? We saw all the grassroots energy on health reform on the right in the Tea Partiers.
Well, on your second question first, I think this is indeed, this is an example of inertia. There was something of a pie-in-the-sky messianic cult around Obama with an expectation that he would walk on water and we could go back to our ordinary affairs. And I think partly failings in Washington, partly failings among the young people who turned out for him, kept them from realizing that they have to remain mobilized and that remaking the country is not simply a matter of putting a guy in the White House. As we see, the country is organized for stagnation, not for mobilization.
Joe in Middletown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I'm a big supporter of the public education system, but I think that the problem with the public education system is that it's imploding from its cost structure. I mean, I think it's one thing to talk about what we can and cannot spend on public education. It's another thing to look at why is it that the cost of college education is going up at 3 and 4 times the rate of inflation. You have, you know, lots of the tenure system in these universities is broken. You have all these professors at the very top making large sums of money teaching minimal credit hours, and you have an army of people at the bottom making minimal amount of money teaching most of the classes.
Professor Roy at UC Berkeley, do you want to address that?
Yes, I think that from the very beginning, the students and faculty movement has been as concerned about how we govern ourselves and how we allocate resources within the university system as we have been about state budget cuts. So this is very much a part of the movement to, in fact, ensure that we are able to be accountable to the state, but that we are also able to govern ourselves in a way that we can provide a world-class education that is cost-effective. And in fact, I think we provide a world-class education that is, in fact, very cost-effective.
Does it need to be rising at much faster than the rate of overall inflation, though, in order to provide that, is, I think, the listener's question?
Well, I think that we are able to maintain a certain rate of a certain quality of education precisely because we are able to invest in research and we are also able to support a wide range of disciplines. I say this because there's a difference between vocational training and education, that it's quite important for great public universities to be able to offer a range of disciplines and professional classes, and but it is also important for them to be able to invest in research.
Fortunato in the Bronx, a CUNY student. Fortunato, we have about 15 seconds for you. Hi.
Hi. I'm just commenting that I don't think it's fair that the New York State government gets all of the CUNY and SUNY tuition and then does not return an equal number of dollars back into the CUNY and SUNY systems.
Is that true? Do they skim? I don't know how that works.
I was informed that they sort of collect all the tuition and then it's split off into separate areas during the protest on the 4th.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll check in and try to check that fact. 30 seconds. Todd Gitlin, where does this movement have to go, in your opinion?
Well, the caller about the costs of higher education was actually on some of the money. There has to be a reckoning with, as Obama would say with respect to healthcare, bending the curve of costs in higher education. That's something that needs to be addressed. But I think that if there is a student movement now that is anything more than an episodic outburst, it has to take itself seriously as part of a larger movement that puts pressure on the system to try to address the extraordinary, devastating inequalities, malfeasance, and overall corruption.
And we will have to leave it there for today. Todd Gitlin, journalism professor at Columbia, and Ananya Roy, professor of urban studies and international development at UC Berkeley. Thank you both very much.